This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with the fabled political consultant Gus Weil. He'll talk about the probable entry of David Bruce Vitter, the U.S. Senator from Metairie, into the Louisiana governor's race in 2015. We'll discuss it with Gus Weil. Also, Senator Dan Clater announcing that he will be running for the 6th Congressional District seat. That's on the menu for discussion. And we'll visit with the man who's the conductor for the Baton Rouge Symphony, Tim Muffet, and the voice of Death Valley, Dan Bornay. They have collaborated for a major holiday presentation with the Baton Rouge Symphony. We'll hear about it right here. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and thank you for your support this week as we continue to seek your contributions and make sure that the programs continue to run as they have for almost 34 years right here on WRKF. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is the fabled political consultant, Gus Weil, and we have much to discuss with him, including the probable entry of U.S. Senator David Vitter, Republican from Metairie, into the 2015 governor's race. What do you think, Gus Weil?
Good morning, Jim. Well, I think that it will be more of the same should he be elected. And what do I mean specifically? I mean that I believe that he will be a clone of our current governor, Governor Jindal. So if you like Jindal and what he's done with our state, by all means, get on the bandwagon for Vitter. If, however, you believe that government should have more to it than just looking after the wealthy and the successful, then better hesitate when you go in the voting booth.
Well, they're both Rhodes Scholars, Bobby Jindal and David Vitter. Conceivably, we could have 16 consecutive years of Rhodes Scholars as leaders of the state of Louisiana, and both Republicans, and both represented the same congressional district. David Vitter's election to the U.S. Senate paved the way for Bobby Jindal to become a congressman. And so they have much in common, but on the other hand, they're not particularly close politically. So David Vitter will quite likely be running without the governor's support, and I suspect he doesn't even want his support right now, considering that Governor Jindal's at 42% in the latest Bernie Pinsonat poll. David Vitter, of course, has weathered a big storm with the revelations in 2007 that he had consorted with prostitutes. That's been 6 years now. He was reelected handsomely in 2010, defeating Charlie Malonsaw. And shortly before showtime, Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network news director, talked with Senator Vitter about the serious sin that David Vitter mentioned when he announced that he had had some problems in 2007.
Back in 07, you apologize for that serious sin. If there's a lot of candidates in this race that could be drudged up again, are you any concerns about that?
If I run, you know, I'm going to be running about Louisiana's future and how we build a stronger, brighter, more prosperous future for our kids and grandkids. So I'm going to be looking forward, not back. You know, what other folks or whatever other candidates do is completely up to them, but that would be my focus.
Gus Weil, sounds like the senator has his talking points down.
By all means, let's skip reality. That's a real sin in a political campaign, the interjection of the way things really are. However, I don't think that would be the worst thing against Jindal.
Or against Vitter.
Because I believe it's the nature of man to sin and other men to forgive, and I find no flaw fault with that. But he and Jindal, there's a lack of empathy towards people, towards humanity, towards human need. I'll give you an example. This state not participating in the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, as those who wish to disparage it call it, costs the state $1.7 billion. That's what our non-participation in that program cost. And no telling how many thousands of people who are uninsured will remain uninsured. No telling how many people would die because they can't get the proper medical help. So those people are, you know, they're cookie-cutter candidates. They all have the same outlook on life. And I'll tell you what they are. They're non-empathetic. That is, they can't sympathize with us if we're down. They just can't do it. You put yourself up by your bootstraps, that kind of thing. Sounds good, but if you're really down for maybe even a socioeconomic reason, that ain't going to help that bootstrap largo.
297-5633 for Gus Weil, Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. We're talking about David Vitter, who gives every indication that he is running for governor of Louisiana. This is something that really was no secret to begin with, and he's a man who is only 52 years old. So Vitter, who at one time had presidential aspirations, quite possibly could win the governor's race in 2015, serve 8 years, and then run for president in his early 60s. So David Vitter may be the next president from Louisiana, not Bobby Jindal. What do you think? Well, what do you think of these candidates who no longer view the mansion as the big enchilada, as Doug Morrow called it? That they're gunning for the big house.
You know, that's fascinating, because what happens is when they get into these into the realm of presidential madness, which infects every politician at some time. When they enter that realm, it means that they no longer are paying much attention to what's going on back home. For example, God only knows how many days of labor Jindal has skipped in for Louisiana to go after his own personal aspirations, that is, being president. And he has the same chance of being president as do I, who is 80 years old. And worn out. So that's all humbug. But it's taken him from his job that we the people elect him to do. We gave him that magnificent mansion. We gave him the bodyguards, limousines, boxes at football games. We treat our governor like king on our Napoleonic Code, which is the foundation of our constitutional government. And for them to then, almost the inception of lifting their hand to take the oath, for them to then turn to their personal aspirations, there's something outrageous about that. Now, it's not outrageous in Louisiana, because we, the people of Louisiana, have a serious flaw, and I'll tell you what the flaw is. Somewhere along the way, we have lost indignation as a quality. We don't get angry at anything. We don't get, be LSU losing. That would be something that would make the average citizen angry at. But otherwise, we honor the egomaniacs and even the crooks. We honor them. They're wonderful. Everything's going to be grand. They bought Torule. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, but if we were living in New Jersey, we might think Chris Christie is an egomaniac. If we were living in California, we might say the same about Jerry Brown. There are more than a few egomaniacs in politics, aren't there, Gus?
Yeah, but no, I don't think you consider those guys being egomaniacs. Jerry Brown, I think, knows that he will never go any higher than the governor of his giant state, California. Christie is a man who I think is going to have a very strong say in the presidential campaign. He's going to get a big Democratic vote. You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because he doesn't look down on anyone who disagrees with him. They're not a Pharisee. They're just somebody with a different opinion. The people in New Jersey who criticized him for befriending the president had to be insane. He needed that president desperately to rebuild that hurricane-torn state. So I don't think that we're such a troubled state. Look, we've got more AIDS in Louisiana. Can you imagine? It's not New York. It's not San Francisco. It's Louisiana. Our students rank terribly in education. Louisiana. And we've run out of every excuse that we have. There are no more excuses except our own lack of indignation and, sad to say, our collective ignorance.
All right. Here's David Vitter's email to his supporters a few days ago. He says, Wendy and I certainly hope your family had a great Thanksgiving, Gus. We did with plenty of time to enjoy each other and reflect on our blessings.
Oh, yeah.
Many good friends and supporters have encouraged me to run for governor in 2015 to bring my focus and leadership to the challenges we face as a state.
Oh, yeah.
We started to consider this as a family over Thanksgiving. We certainly haven't made our decision yet, so we'll be reflecting and praying on it very carefully through the Christmas holidays. As we do, please keep us in your thoughts and prayers, Gus, and of course, please offer any insights you have. Whatever our decision, I'm deeply honored by the opportunity to serve. These are important and unfortunately perilous times. We must all redouble our efforts to preserve our freedoms and use them to build a brighter future for our kids and grandkids. Sincerely, David.
You know, that's a really just a cliche after cliche after cliche. There's not an idea in it. Why am I running for governor? That's really what it ought to be about. No, it's about family, how he and the little lady are thinking about this. And it's about religion. We want your prayers. It's all of those things that are important but don't have a great deal to do with what ails this state of Louisiana. Where's a darn idea?
Is it bad to pray?
No, it's good to pray, you know. But there's got to be, you can't just pray. You've got to go out there and sow and weed the garden and plant the seeds. Unfortunately, prayer, as important as it is not enough. I think a better way to put it is that God helps those who help themselves.
Well, when asked in a recent Bernie Pinsonat, Buster McKenzie poll who would win the election, 600 likely Louisiana voters, this is a representative sample, and the candidates mentioned were David Vitter, John Bel Edwards, John Kennedy, John J. Darden, and Scott Angel. Vitter got 30%, Kennedy 19%, Darden 18%, John Bel Edwards 8%, and Scott Angel 2% with 23% undecided. So Vitter starts with a base that would, in an open primary, Gus, it would seem that if he runs for governor, he probably has one shot or one place in the runoff that's wrapped up, and it would just come down to the candidate who faces him in the general election.
Yes.
So it'll be a mad scramble to see who gets in the race with Vitter. And some people may be salivating about the prospect of being in a runoff with Vitter, considering his vulnerabilities. But here is a man who's never lost an election. He will be tough to beat.
No doubt about it. My God, this far from the election, he leads by a substantial vote. But I'll tell you the two votes he won't get. They won't catch up with him in the first primary, but they'll catch up with him in the runoff. He won't get a black vote. And he won't get a Democrat. Those are two groups who will absolutely go with whoever opposes him.
297-5633. We'll return with Gus Weil. And David Vitter, by the way, is actively trying to help Bill Cassidy get elected to the U.S. Senate. And if elected governor, David Vitter would appoint his successor to his seat in the U.S. Senate. So David Vitter could become a man with control of the governor's mansion and influence on two U.S. senators. We'll talk about it when we return with the fabled Gus Weil in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing, and Gus Weil is our guest for another segment. And we're talking about David Vitter being a candidate for governor of Louisiana. David Vitter was elected to the district in New Orleans, District 81 in the Louisiana House, succeeding David Duke in that district. And then he was elected to Congress, succeeding Bob Livingston. And then he was elected to the U.S. Senate, succeeding John Breaux. So he is a man who, in the last 22 years, has been on the ballot frequently and has never lost a race. Now, there aren't many people who can say that. Bobby Jindal can't say it. Mary Landrieu can't say it. But David Vitter is the undefeated champion of Louisiana politics right now. Carolyn on Burbank. Carolyn, good morning. You're on with Gus.
Yeah. I have one comment and a question. First of all, a comment regarding David Vitter. I did not vote for him because of his unforgivable behavior, and I cannot believe people voted for him. That is just not okay. My second question is there anything the people of the state can do to override Jindal's refusal to get that money so people with no insurance have an opportunity to get health care?
All right. Gus,
you know, if anybody told me that in this age of enlightenment, in this year, in our times, with all of the intellect and books, and that we would be having to ask that question, in the name of Almighty God, how can we help our uninsured by accepting money, our tax money, from the federal government? I would say they were crazy, and that's impossible. So, no, I don't have an answer. I really don't. It's obscene, and it's bizarre.
Sharon in Sherwood Forest. Sharon, good morning. You're on the air with Gus Weil.
Good morning. Mr. Weil, I really wish you were back in Baton Rouge helping the good Democratic candidate. However, what I would like to talk in regards to is both Vitter and Jindal. First of all, Jindal will never become president. I think his one thing that just stands out in my mind is his sissy walk when he responded to...
all right. Well, let's not get personal about this.
Okay. Well, I'm just... It is personal when it's said that he will probably not win. I would like to know if Mr. Weil has any idea who would be a strong Democratic candidate.
I don't know of anyone right now. The Democratic Party is, to a great extent, and I know they're going to resent this, non-productive and asleep. Something happened to the Democratic Party that I and others so active in.
You're talking about Gus in Louisiana or nationally?
In Louisiana.
Okay.
Now, there's some good Republicans. For example, I think that the lieutenant governor is a top man, Republican and office holder. I think that he's the kind of man who would make us a great governor. I do not know if he has a chance.
Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air.
Good morning, Gus. Good morning, Jim. Here we have David Vitter, along with Bill Cassidy, doing Hurricane Gustav, signing people up for FEMA while they voted on the budget of Mr. Ryan to defund FEMA. They did the same thing, Jim, for public radio and public television. They want to kill Big Bird. But let's talk about something else. Do you think, Gus, although I'm sure Mr. Vitter is against raising the minimum wage, do you think he would legalize and raise the wages for sex workers in Louisiana?
I have no comment.
Well, it is interesting that David Vitter has irritated immensely the Senate leader for the Democrats, Harry Reid. And Harry Reid has commented on David Vitter's failings. But Reid lives in a state where this kind of stuff is legal.
It sure is.
So maybe they ought to just trade states.
Well, you know, I never thought of that. Now, that's what I call creativity. That's wonderful.
297-5633 for Gus Weil. Now, Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio News Director, shortly before this show, talked with Senator Vitter and asked him if this was the real deal as far as him running. Here's how the senator responded.
Now, in that email that you sent to supporters, there's a link where you can donate. It seems like you're leaning in that direction. Is that safe to say that you may run?
No, I'm not leaning in any direction, but we're thinking hard about it.
He's not leaning in any direction.
He's leaning so far right, he's on the ground.
297-5633, HB in Denham Springs. Hello, HB. You're on the air.
Good morning. Mr. Wild, you're probably one of the best-known legends in the state of Louisiana, next to and equal to any politician that carries the same legacy. My question is this. If you would have stayed in Louisiana, couldn't you have helped in some way to alleviate a lot of the problems that we're facing today? And second part, why did you leave the state that you care so much about? Thank you.
I think that that is a very fair question. No, I don't think I would have had any effect because, after all, I'm now 80 years old, and when I left the state, I was well into my 70s. However, during my productive years, I helped some pretty good men, though I never had the ego to consider myself worthy of being the candidate. I helped a man named John McKiffin, who I think was a great governor. I helped David Treen, who I think was a good governor. I helped those kind of men. Also, I taught at LSU 2 times and never accepted a dime in pay. I was the host of Louisiana Legends on Louisiana Public Broadcasting for 18 years and never accepted a dime. So I did my little part, although in retrospect, it really isn't that much.
297-5633 is your number. The man you mentioned, Jay Darden, a Republican from Baton Rouge, who's, of course, been in the political game since 1987 when he sought a state Senate seat and lost a close one to Larry Bankston. He says, I intend to run regardless of what David chooses to do. John Kennedy, who also is weighing the race, says it doesn't change my position at all. I'm very seriously considering running for governor. Now, that's what they say. I think Darden is in no matter what. I'm not sure about Kennedy. But when a guy who's the titular leader of the Republican Party, and by virtue of the fact that he's the most popular Republican in the state with the highest office other than governor, David Vitter, may very well be a force that other candidates don't want to mess with. They might seek solace elsewhere, Gus.
Oh, in every political race, you're confronted with those kind of decisions. For example, when John McKiffin ran for governor, no one had ever heard of him, could not even pronounce his name. No one had heard of him outside of his constituency in northeast Louisiana, which elected him a legislator and public service commissioner. But the other two-thirds of the state never heard of him. He had to make a decision that he would be running against a Russell Long, United States Senator, hand-selected candidate. Delisimps Morrison, former mayor of the city of New Orleans, popular mayor. Gillis Long, United States Congressman. Former Governor Robert Cannon, for gosh sakes, extremely popular. So when he thought about running, he must have had some very scary moments and thought about not running. And I'm sure that people who face Vitter face those same decisions. But every race presents those kind of consequence and decisions. And you find usually good men stay in the race. Because there's an interesting line, it's not original with me. It says, a man does not fight merely to win. Let me repeat that. A man does not fight merely to win. Sometimes he fights just to be the lone voice in the wilderness.
Well, Delia points out that there have been some good women who have run for governor, including one who was elected in Kathleen Blanco. And the election, the next one for governor, the general elections, November 21st, 2015. Mark that on your calendars. On that night, who will be the next governor of Louisiana. Delia also writes, how will the Republican Party's continuing attack on women's reproductive rights affect Vitter or any Republican gubernatorial candidate?
In Louisiana, it'll help him. It'll help him. That's playing to the choir.
Being pro-life.
But goodness sakes, I'll bet you that in the United States Senate, where Vitter has served all these years, I'll bet outside of the Tea Party senators, Cruz, Lee of Utah, and three or four others, the people who know him best, I'll bet he would not get one vote. Additionally, I'm anxious to know what his record is in the United States Senate. I would be surprised, very surprised, if he has done one single tangible accomplishment for the people of Louisiana.
297-5633 for Gus Weil, who, as you can hear, is not bullish on Senator Vitter, but does acknowledge that the senator will be a formidable candidate for governor in 2015, when the senator will be 54 years old. Some would say right in the prime of his political life. And he is a man who has weathered a storm or two. His wife certainly is an asset for him, Gus. Without her, I don't think he would be in the political condition he is now.
Well, you can tell that that's the case. He mentions once or twice his marriage, his family, prayer for consideration. He and his wife thought about it and are thinking about it. So he obviously feels that way, too. I don't know the lady. I'm sure she's a fine person.
And it's quite possible that they have a successful marriage, despite his issues of a few years ago. And now, you know, I'm inclined to give him a break on this, Gus, because this happened in 2007, the revelation, which was about something that happened prior to that. So by the time he runs for governor, we'll be more than 10 years out, unless there's something new. I would think there are other issues to discuss with Senator Vitter rather than his fall.
I agree. I just gave you the main issue. Senator, how long have you been in the United States Senate? Such and such a time. Name each piece of successful legislation that you have introduced, be it under Republican or Democrat president. Judging by what we've been setting him up there to do.
You know, what you're saying is almost identical to what Ben Baggert and David Duke were saying about Bennett Johnston in 1990. He'd been there 18 years, and they said, what has this man done in 18 years? Can you name anything Senator Johnston did in 18 years?
I don't know. I never was a big fan of his, but I know one thing he did in 18 years. He fought the Superdome being built in New Orleans. That's something he did.
Well, that was not good.
I repeat, he fought the building
of
the Superdome.
He also was one of six Democrats in the Senate, including Harry Reid, I might add, who voted against Bill Clinton's economic revitalization plan in 1993, which gave the economy the boost that it needed and ultimately resulted in the budget deficit being erased and the stock market going up three times, more than three times, during the Clinton 8 years in office. So Bennett Johnston cast a vote against his fellow Democrat, and I will say this for him. He has acknowledged since that it was a mistake. And Senator Vitter has acknowledged making a mistake, but he wants to stop there. I have a feeling that his opponents are going to, at some point, run ads that will be unflattering. But will the electorate care, and will it perhaps backfire on people at this point?
Well, it can certainly be overdone. I've seen men, those things used against candidates, and then the person they're used against get a huge sympathy vote. So it has to be handled very, very delicately, no doubt about it. And it may not even be a factor, depending on who he has to run against.
All right, here are a few questions from listeners for Gus. Mary Landrieu, is she beatable next year?
Yes, but I think she'll win. I think she'll win. She's not a great senator, but she's a good senator. And she has some fabulous background that is that father, who was the legendary popular mayor of New Orleans, Moon Landrieu, and then her brother, who is now mayor, and I understand is doing a fine job. Those two things are not going to hurt her.
All right, here's another one about the 6th District Congressional seat that Bill Cassidy is vacating to run for the U.S. Senate. Gus, the latest entry into that race is Senator Dan Clater, who is represented by your former protege, Roy Fletcher, who will be with us tomorrow. I'm sure that Roy and Dan Clater will run a vigorous campaign against a familiar name to Louisiana, Paul Dietzel, the grandson of the great white father, the head coach of LSU in 1958.
You certainly get every Chinese vote.
Well, the Chinese bandits?
Yes.
I don't know. But at any rate, I would think that's a distinct minority. Senator Clater will be tough in that race, and I don't think we're going to have a dearth of candidates. We should have several candidates running in 2014 for the 6th District Congressional seat. 2975633, John in Lafayette. John, you're on with Gus.
Yes, Gus, Jim, good morning. I've run into David Vitter a few times through the years, and he has no ability to relate to the common man. I can promise the listeners that. I don't see how he could govern Louisiana. I don't see how he could get along with the legislature, but that's another story. My question to Gus is, what about Mitch Landrieu running for governor? Could he possibly beat David Vitter?
I don't know. I've never even considered that. It's certainly a thought. And he would come out of New Orleans with a roaring vote, and he would get a tremendous, probably as many black voters as any a Caucasian who would run. So he'd be formidable.
Ann downtown. Ann, you're on with Gus.
Good morning. I had a comment about a question about David Vitter. Nobody has mentioned the issue with his staff member who had an abusive relationship with his girlfriend, and that was several years after his other issue with sex trafficking with a woman. So I kind of tend to see a pattern here that.
All right, we're short on time, Ann, but the senator did have a staff member who got in trouble for assaulting his girlfriend, and that was brought up by Charlie Melancon and others in the Senate race of 2010, and the voters, in their wisdom, decided that Senator Vitter should be reelected. I don't know that 2015 that's going to be much of an issue.
No.
But maybe it should be.
It depends on... In Louisiana, we have so many more important issues. I believe that morality is important for our leaders. But more than that, can they get something done? Can they work with people? Can they fashion a legislature who will work for the betterment of people?
Well, Gus, we got to roll, but thank you so much. Always a pleasure, Gus Weil. Let's talk soon.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. We'll return with the man who leads the Baton Rouge Symphony, Tim Muffin, and Dan Bornay. All right. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A special treat. We're joined in studio by the man who's the conductor of the Baton Rouge Symphony, Tim Muffin, the longest-serving conductor for the symphony, who is joined with a new cohort, Dan Bornay, the voice of Death Valley. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Tim Muffet, yeah, as I said, you're now the longest
How about that? I didn't know that about myself, Jim.
15 years now?
Yes, it's 15 years.
15 years for Tim Muffet and 27 years at Death Valley for 28 years.
28. Just finished the 28th.
Okay. Yeah. And how did the two of you get together?
Tim? Yep, well, we have a mutual friend in Kelly Hurtado, I think, who got us all in the same room together, and we started talking, and this seemed like a very natural collaboration. Dan is a great storyteller and a natural personality behind the microphone, as we all know, and we've got a terrific piece of music, and so it all came together.
And what a terrific gift we have in this community of our symphony and our chorus, and Tim's leadership. The program he's put together is really wonderful. Combination of great sacred music and combination of secular music as well. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very, very entertaining three performances.
Well, the voice of the Valley, Dan Bornay, will accompany the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra, the annual Home for the Holidays concerts, and it starts tonight.
Tonight.
7:30.
Yeah.
And then Sunday at 3 and 7 o'clock, and tickets are on sale at the Baton Rouge River Center for the Performing Arts. Dan Bornay has quite a voice, as we know, so what will you be doing?
I will be reading, and the orchestra will be playing.
Yes.
A Visit from St. Nicholas, the great poem written by Clement Moore back in the early 1800s, and it's become a wonderful staple of our Christmas season. I know my mother read it to me when I was a child, and I can recall the images in the book that she used, the smoke and the reindeer and that type of stuff. So we're going to try to connect with young and old alike three times, Thursday and twice Sunday.
Have you been a symphony fan for the time leading up to this big performance?
Well, I've always loved symphonic music. I'm a bass clef guy. I was telling Tim I played drums when I was in high school, and not well. And the timpani we had, we had two, and of course, we couldn't tune anything but E flat and F. That's all
right.
We did.
Oh, wow.
And so it was pretty simple.
Yeah,
it's either the right one or the left one. But I'll tell you, the amount of talent in this orchestra, and of course, our guest soloists are wonderful. I've heard them rehearse twice. They're just terrific.
Well, the Sunday matinee is part of the orchestra's ongoing outreach program titled Musical Gateways, Giving the Gift of Music. I know you're quite proud of that,
you
maestro.
Bet. We have, through several very generous local businesses, you know, that's how great things happen, is through philanthropy from our business and private community, we're able to offer the opportunity for some underserved kids to come to this program for free. And it's a Sunday matinee program. It's also open to the public too, and anyone's welcome to come to it. But we do have this Musical Gateways program. We're very proud of the opportunity to get some people who might not otherwise be able to come and enjoy the great music of the program.
'Twas the Night Before Christmas, read by Dan Bornay, voice of the Valley, as in Death Valley, tonight and twice Sunday. And there's some other singers who will. We've got it. Remarkable soprano and a baritone. They'll
yes.
be performing as well. Who will be on stage with Dan and the rest?
Well, Mara Bonde is back. She's been with us now in previous seasons, 2 years previously, and was so popular we just brought her back once more. Mara comes from Boston. She's actually frequently performed with the Boston Pops. She's, you know, really a terrific singer. And then we have some local talent, Dennis Jesse, who's on the faculty at Louisiana State University. The two will be singing together some wonderful duets and some solo things. And Dennis is an extraordinary singer as well. So we're very excited about that talent. And then we have our Baton Rouge Symphony Chorus. David Shaler is the conductor of that. And they sound as wonderful as ever.
Well, Dan is a man who not only speaks at Death Valley, he's master of ceremonies at more events than anybody else in this community, I think. And I'm sure this is something you're quite excited about.
I really am. I've got a nice rocking chair there.
Yes.
I'm probably the oldest guy on the stage, and they recognize that, and I appreciate it. And we'll have, I'm sure we'll have some kids, around that chair as we... As we read this great poem, this great gift from a man who was a true intellectual and a great academician, but is known in history as the guy who wrote this poem. He wrote it for his wife and for his six children, and he read it to them on Christmas Eve, 1922, and it was 40 years later that he actually acknowledged the fact that he had indeed written it. So it's an interesting twist of fate that as intellectual as he was, a poem becomes his legacy to the world.
Well, Tim, it's a busy holiday season. Not only these three events in the next few days, there's one tomorrow, isn't there?
Yes, that's right. Well, we're musicians, and this is the time of year when we are in great demand. And we've got our Holiday Brass program, which is a ensemble of the brass and percussion and harp from the orchestra that plays special arrangements from the holiday season, and we do numerous performances throughout the Baton Rouge area, and the first one's tomorrow night, kicks off. I do want to mention Sunday night is a very important event. It's the launch of, it's the same program, this Holiday Pops program, but it's the launch of our All-Star Automotive Pop Series, and this is a new series for us. And that's the first concert of that is Sunday night, 7 o'clock, and then we've got two other programs through the rest of the season, Pops Concerts, which is kind of a new, it's a new series for us, and we're very proud to have All-Star Automotive on board with us.
And coming the 13th, Friday, at St. Joseph's Cathedral.
Mm-hmm, that'll be the Holiday Brass program again. That's become a great Baton Rouge tradition, come early, because it fills up quickly.
That cathedral is a wonderful house
music.
Yeah. Anyone who's never been to a concert there should go and just relax in the beauty of the house.
Do you go there on Christmas Eve for midnight mass?
Not there, no. I go to Saint-Jean-Vianney now. I've got another job.
As Deacon Dan?
Yeah, as Deacon Dan, right. Well, one other thing, Tim. I think on Sunday at 2 o'clock we have an instrument petting zoo.
Right.
So kids come out early, and in the lobby there we'll have musicians, and they'll have their instruments. So young kids can, you know, touch a clarinet, and it's going to be fun.
Well, the symphony was founded in 1947. It's the oldest arts organization in the region, the oldest professional orchestra in the state, and it's gone through some interesting times. When you arrived, things were not as good as they are now.
They were not, no. And it's, but we have pulled ourselves out of that, and we're in a thriving situation now. You know, running any nonprofit or an arts organization is always a challenge, and but we enjoy a great deal of community support, both financially and spiritually, I would say. I think this organization is valued by the community, and that means a lot.
Well, Tim, if you have followed him, he's involved with performances all over the United States and outside the country. Some of his recent engagements: St. Louis, Tulsa, Wichita, Houston, Phoenix, Edmonton, Spokane, Columbus, Buffalo, Los Angeles, Harrisburg, PA. How does Baton Rouge compare with some of these places where obviously symphonic music is appreciated?
Well, that's, you know, it's always my favorite place to be, for starters, is in Baton Rouge. Every place is a little bit different. And the one thing I'll say about our audiences in Baton Rouge is that, just like everything else about the state, it's truly authentic. And I feel like our audiences really come for an authentic experience. Mm-hmm. Some audiences, I think, go to hear the orchestra to be seen, to see and be seen. And that's part of the fun, too. But I do feel from our audiences that there's a great love of the music, whether it's a symphony of Beethoven or, as they're going to hear, or Santa Baby, it's part of what we do. We run the gamut of all different musical styles. But I do feel a very strong connection with our audiences, that they genuinely love what's coming off the stage. And they're proud of their orchestra.
And you were chosen right after... I guess, well, it was the 50th season, so that would make this the 65th season.
It's the 65th, yes.
65th season. So it's been quite a ride for Tim Muffet, who was here, left, and came back.
As fast as I could, yes.
And Dan Bornay is a man who some might say, what in the world is he doing with the Baton Rouge Symphony? But he's got the pipes. I'm sure it'll be quite a collaboration tonight.
Well, he won't be singing, but he'll be reciting, hopefully.
It's been great that, you know, Dan's musical background makes a big difference in a piece like this. I've done many pieces with narrators where the narrator did not have an understanding of music, and then it becomes kind of just more about the mechanics. But Dan really has a feel for the music and for how these two things connect, and it's going to be a really powerful performance.
Well, Tim Muffet will be dressed in style with Manuel Martinez.
Absolutely.
Selecting the appropriate attire, and I'm sure Dan, you will be in black tie.
I will be attired. Yeah, I will be in a red tie and a red cummerbund. I'll have the tuxedo.
That'll work. Same outfit you wore in Everybody's All American, right?
25 years ago. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the 25th anniversary.
You were a man in what, your early 40s then?
Yeah. You know, I talked to Alan Blomquist about 6 weeks ago. Alan was the he was the associate producer of Everybody's All-American, and reminisced with him about it. He said, you know, now in California, he said, the first place we look to do movies is Louisiana now.
Isn't that great?
It's the first place we look. Now, there may be reasons why Louisiana would not work. But he said, among my producing peers, and he's really done some great work over the last 25 years, mm-hmm. they look to Louisiana to make film. I think that's terrific.
Yeah.
And I think it lifts mm-hmm. everybody's appreciation for the arts.
It all started with Everybody's All-American. Yeah. And then a year later, we had Sex, Lies, and Videotape. I'm sure Steven Soderbergh was motivated by Dan Bornay and Dennis Quaid and Taylor Hackford.
Well, he was probably motivated by Jessica Lange and Dennis Quaid in the pond scene or whatever. I forget which one it was.
Timothy Hutton was in that film, too, as I recall.
He was, and so was John Goodman. Goodman had, after that film, became a fixture in the Tiger Stadium press box.
And Mike Papajohn was Quaid's double, wasn't he?
He was Quaid's double and has made a career out of it, yes. Mm-hmm. He's just an absolute terrific stuntman and actor now.
Yeah. Well, Tim, as I mentioned, we've talked about this on the show before. A few years ago, you had several engagements in Los Angeles. You were right there at the Hollywood Bowl, right?
Yeah, the Hollywood Bowl. That was a remarkable experience. That's a truly, truly great place to do a performance. 18,000 people, but you feel connected to everyone. Just, it's an architectural miracle in a way. I felt very fortunate to have done that there.
How did that happen?
My agent. to be really honest with you,
he's a bowling fan. They said, "Why don't you come over to Hollywood and bowl?"
Was it your agent who got you the gig on Everybody's All American?
No, I had nothing to do with that. But I had no agent. But, I guess Kelly's my agent now.
Right, Kelly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Kelly's done well, and tickets are available at 383-0500. That's the Symphony office number, 225-383-0500, or at brso.org. And it's tonight, 7:30. I'm surprised you came in here pleasantly so, Dan. You're not resting that voice. You're going to be ready tonight, I'm sure.
Life goes on. Life goes on. I'll tell you, the voices of these two soloists, though, are remarkable. And
yeah,
people will really be treated.
Christina asked about Mara Bonde.
Yes, Mara Bonde.
Yeah, obviously, this is somebody who, in the symphonic world, is well regarded.
Absolutely, and one of the great things about Mara is that she can, you know, a program like this that we're going to do, this holiday program, runs the gamut from classical to popular, and so we need someone who can sing from Handel's Messiah, but then someone who can also pull off Santa Baby at the end of the program. and Mara's one of those great talents that is equally at home in the popular musical style and in the classical style.
And loves crossing over.
Oh, yeah.
And loves the transition between the two schemes and does a great job at it.
And Dennis Jesse, right?
Mm. Yes.
He is with the LSU School of Music.
Yes. Right. Dennis is just one of the remarkable baritone voices in the United States today, if I do say so. I mean, he's really an extraordinary talent. We're fortunate to have him here in Baton Rouge, and we're especially fortunate to have him on stage with us tonight.
And the duets that they do with the mm-hmm. With both the classical music and the popular music are just terrific. To see mm-hmm. the change in how they approach the music is fun.
As we look ahead to the remainder of the season, anything in particular that you'd like to showcase right now?
Well, we do have, you know, a now long-going collaboration that we've had with Baton Rouge Ballet Theater is the Nutcracker, Tale from the Bayou. I want to throw that out there mm-hmm. because that's something we're just very proud of.
Coming later this month, yeah.
Yes, we love that association and we love that partnership, a great organization. And then we have one of the biggest things is Long Long, who is the hottest classical music pianist on the planet today, is going to be joining us in February for our Pennington Great Performers in Concert series, and that will be a very big event for the community.
That's in February.
Yes.
How do you get these people?
That one was a long time coming. I mean, that has taken us years to put together. But we get these people, Jim, because we have a reputation now in the music industry for treating our guest artists really well. Mm-hmm. We have a reputation for a very high level of musical performance. And then when we go to these, when we go to their agents and we say, is this person available? Instead of no, they say, let's look at it and see what we can do. And so we are able to get the best of the best. And that you won't find a hotter ticket than Long Long in classical music today.
And this year there were some high points, as there always are. But looking back, Audra McDonald back in May, she was fabulous.
Yes, and Diana Ross as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, the when you ask how we get these people, a lot of it has to do with once we got the first one in the door, they had such a positive experience in our community, with our people, and that helps us when we go back and ask for them to come back.
Well, tonight it's Tim Muffet, Dan Bornay, Maura Bonde, Dennis Jesse, and others with the Baton Rouge Symphony. Tickets available 383-0500 or at brso.org. We thank you for joining us today. For J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.